Welcome to Off the Page. I'm Stephen Copeland. For many, Christmas time no longer brings with it the sense of bliss or excitement we may have experienced as children. It can come with a heaviness, darkness, or an overwhelming sense of busyness that numbs us to the magic of the season. I know for me, the last several Christmases have come with a sting, and I often find myself mentally and emotionally checking out during the holidays. I try to open my heart again and again, but it's hard sometimes, and I retreat into the dark. There's no better person to help inspire listeners to find joy and sacredness in the holiday season than today's guest, Dr. Thomas Moore. You may recognize his name not only from church history, no, not that Thomas Moore, but also from his number one New York Times bestseller, Care for the Soul. He has written 30 other books about bringing soul to personal life and culture, including the book we discussed today, The Soul of Christmas, which was published in 2016 by Franciscan Media. In his youth, Thomas was a Catholic monk and studied music composition. He has a PhD in religious studies from Syracuse University and was a university professor for a number of years. He is also a psychotherapist, influenced mainly by Carl Jung and James Hillman. In his work, he brings together spirituality, mythology, depth psychology, and the arts, emphasizing the importance of images and imagination. What I love about his book, The Soul of Christmas, is that it hits on two levels. The personal, as he helps readers to reacquaint themselves with the magic of Christmas, but also the universal, as he invites both Christians and non-Christians alike to contemplate the mystical dimensions of Christmas. Even the aspects of the season that we may not think of as spiritual or have written off as childish or naive. This conversation was playful and mystical. Much of it unfolds in the realm of symbol and myth. We talk about Christmas trees, Santa Claus, angels, and yes, Jesus in the Incarnation. I'm not sure if Thomas calls himself a Christian these days, but I think you'll find that his ability to speak the universal language of the soul is its own invitation to authentic spiritual experience, no matter one's faith or religion. He is traditional in some ways, non-traditional in others, but if you're open to it, I think his draw to symbol and myth can help inspire the spiritual imagination and ultimately rediscover God in new ways this time of year. I hope this episode helps you to open your heart to the magic of the season, just as his book has done for me in this conversation as well. You can order The Soul of Christmas in the Franciscan Media store or wherever you purchase your books. It's a great, thoughtful Christmas gift, and if it's not looking like you'll receive it in time where you live, maybe you can share this episode with your loved one and tell them their book is on the way. So, without further ado, here's Thomas Moore. But first, a message from our sponsor. Earning a Master of Theological Studies with a Franciscan Theology lens is now possible anywhere in the world. The master's program at the Franciscan School of Theology offers a blend of academic engagement and spiritual reflection. You can learn at your own pace while connecting with fellow students and instructors in a respectful and down-to-earth environment. Embark on a 24-month mutually transformative journey with the world-renowned faculty and instructors from FST. The Master of Theological Studies, Franciscan Theology, is 100% online. You can complete it in 24 months, and it is fully accredited. I actually just completed this program, and it's amazing. So I highly recommend it. To learn more, you can visit theologicalstudies.sandiego.edu. Again, that's theologicalstudies.sandiego.edu. Thomas Moore, thank you for joining us on the Off the Page podcast.
Thank you. It's really a great pleasure to be with you today.
So you've written more than a dozen books since the release of your New York Times bestseller, Care for the Soul. But this is the only book you've written based around a specific holiday or season. So why did you write this book and where did it come from within your own soul?
Well, it's really hard to know where to start. In my studies, in my education, especially my PhD work at Syracuse University in religious studies, I studied the role of myth I studied the interpretation, sort of psychological reading of fairy tales. I've been interested in looking at rather popular images. I'm very interested in looking at the deeper aspects of many films. You know, that so all of it, any kind of imagery, is really important. It's my work. It's what I do. And so I've always loved Christmas. And I'm a musician. For years, I was preparing music for Christmas holidays. In fact, I made a recording of Christmas music a dozen years ago that I think is terrific, and we did a PBS special with it. So I've been interested in making Christmas more intelligent and known to people. There's much more going on in Christmas than people understand or realize. And it's not enough just to have these articles that come out at Christmas time saying the Christmas tree is the cosmic tree. You have to go further than that. So that's what I decided to do with this book. Francisca Media asked me to write something for them, just in general, to write something. And I thought this would be a great time, a great opportunity for me to write about Christmas. I was a Christian monk. I was a Catholic monk for 13 years. And I have a very strong background there in the Christian theology. In fact, in my own work, I consider myself a theologian, and a kind of a modern one, a non-aligned one. And so it was an opportunity for me to gather all my powers, all the things that I can do with my background and my interest and my love of Christmas, and make something of it.
Yeah, you talked about kind of the realm of symbol, and you mentioned myth, fairy tales. You dive into a couple of those symbols in your book. Would you like to begin with the Christmas tree? I love the way you broke that down cosmically, and I think that people would find that interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, the tree itself is such an important part of life. You know, trees, I think, they're standing, like right now when I talk to you, there are, I don't know, probably at least a couple thousand trees around me. And they stand there in front of you, and you have to have a relationship to them. And I think anything like that is so common in your experience, I guess people who grow up in a desert wouldn't have that experience, but I do. And so the tree is going to become mythic. Most things in life, most things that have any value to them, they shift over time from being ordinary and factual to mythic. That means they have another layer of meaning that they haven't had before. Your own house can become a myth. You know, if you're with it long enough and if you love it, you begin to tell stories about it and the things that take place in it. It has its mythic side. I grew up I spent a lot of time in my youth in a farmhouse in upstate New York with barns and various houses, and there was no plumbing in the house. It's quite a nice experience. And now that house has become a myth, and my family often comes with me and we visit that old house. It's just a ruin now. But even as a ruin, it seems even more sacred, which is almost the same as saying mythic.
Yeah, I think it was, not to cut you off, but I think I read, maybe it was Richard Rohr one time, he said that we think of myth as something that's not true, but in the way he and a lot of mystics use it, it means something that's truer than true. Is that correct? You know, there's a sacred layer beneath this.
Yes.
You know, contained within this house, contained within whatever it is, there's stories, there's soul,
Yeah, all of those things apply. So any of those words could be used interchangeably in a way. So what happens is that you experience that thing at another level. It has a much more meaning. And it even takes on a certain reverence. you may feel reverence for it, as we do the house and the country that I spent all those years in. It's now a holy place in a way. Not in any religious sense, you know, typical religious sense, but in the sense that in our family it's holy. It wouldn't be that for people in another family, probably, but for us it is. And so it has another level. It has risen to another level. A tree can do that. So a tree is just a tree, but if you have a special tree, it really goes. I'll give you another example. My mother, my dear mother, who died 15 years ago, she had a tree in her yard. It's called the Rose of Sharon. Rose of Sharon. I always mix that up. Rose of Sharon. And so when I have moved to different houses over the years in my life, I have planted a Rose of Sharon tree. We have one next to our house right now. That tree is not an ordinary tree. That tree is my mother's tree. It's like her. It's an image for her. A Christmas tree is closer to that. It's a tree that has been elevated in meaning and reverence because it's been associated. For example, the Bible associates that tree with the tree in the Garden of Eden. Well, that tree is a very special tree. It's in the story of Eden, which I would call a mythology, and I don't mean to say it's not real. I mean that it is very real. That tree of Eden helps us see that all trees have a certain holiness to them. And so when it comes to Christmas time, we associate Christmas with a tree. It's not in this original story, but it has been associated with Christmas. And it is brought into the house, which is unusual. You don't usually bring a tree into your house. So that shows how unusual and special this tree is. And then we put lights on it because, as we might see in our conversation, Christmas is really a celebration of light. So we put lights on the tree. Originally, people put actual candles on the tree. It's hard to imagine. They go up in flames so fast. But we put lights and bulbs on the tree. We make it special, and we show that this tree is not a literal tree. Literal trees don't have lights and little decorations on them. We have transformed the tree into something meaningful to us, deeply meaningful. We bring that tree into our house. We keep it in our house for a little season, a short season. And we have gifts under the tree, which shows we might be able to talk about gifts later, how important they are to Christmas. And so we bring that tree there, and we have seen the sanctity of the tree, and we bring it into our world, and it helps give us the glow of Christmas by having that tree in our homes.
Yeah, yeah. As you're talking, I'm reminded of at least one of my favorite scenes in Christmas films is in Charlie Brown Christmas, a favorite of my dad's, where he picks out this humble tree and he kind of gets shamed for it. But in the end, in his moment of rejection, he goes and picks this tree up again and he carries it with him. And then his friends come back to him and they decorate it for him. And it's, to me, I mean, they talk about symbol. There's so much metaphor there. But it really captures something about Christmas. You know, like we're going to dare pick up this thing. Perhaps it's something broken in our story or an element of pain around this time of year. And we're going to pick it up, carry it with us in community. We're going to gather around it and decorate it and make it beautiful and redeem it in a sense, but also not turn our back on the fact that this is a humble tree.
Well, that is, that's the other side of it too. The tree is nature coming in. Mm. And so Christmas is in some ways a celebration of nature, in many ways, actually.
Yeah, and then in Christian theology, of course, you can have a lot of fun with this, with the manger perhaps coming from wood or the cross. I mean, there's There can be so much myth depth behind spiritual significance contained within this tree. Franciscan theology too, Bonaventure's Tree of Life. I mean, there's just so much here. And I love that one of my favorite things about your book, Thomas, is that it invites you to see the depth of things.
Yes, the fact that everything is multi-layered.
Yes.
It may have a practical purpose, but at the same time, it can have a mystical purpose.
Yes. Yeah, and what do you mean by that word mystic? You know, when people listening, whenever they hear a word like myth or mystic, you know, or magic is a word that you use in your book as well. I personally love those words, but for some, it's, ooh, that's a little too scary for me.
I just mean escaping from the limitations of the philosophy that we live under, which is science. Science is wonderful what it's done for us, but it has also given us a very limited worldview. We can only live a portion of human life if we live what science tells us, the way the world is. It's wonderful what they give us, but it's far too limited. So to be a mystic is to reach beyond that kind of a limited world. And I think what happens is that people feel, they use the word illuminated, which is a nice word. Illumination is is a big word, and especially Christian mystics, they talk about a stage of illumination in their mystical life. It means that they have, not that they are enlightened mentally, but they are transformed into beings more of light rather than of ordinary substance. That now we are people who can live at another level and can appreciate that even in this world that is so factual and so material, we can also live. We can be in a way that is beyond that, transcendent. And that quality is different. And it's an important thing. And if all of us could do that, I think we'd have such a sensitivity that we'd be able to get along better.
Yeah, I think you write in your book that you hope that our next age is one of imagination. And so it's not turning our back on postmodernism or science, but it is, if I'm understanding you correctly, you know, it is giving magic a shot. You wrote, you know, Christmas is about giving utopia a chance. I love that line. Am I tracking there?
Totally, completely. And all these things relate to each other because utopia, which means a kind of the word itself means no place, but that means an other place, you know, another place besides this world we live in. And that would be a world that we can imagine as being one of that is peaceful, where people can get along, where we can each be creative in our own way and not fear extinction from all of the other people around us. That kind of a world, utopian, is very similar to the mystic talking about being illuminated. It's another level of existence that's real and can coexist with a factual one and a scientific one, but it's different. That's all. It's just different. And it gives us something that is that is very important for human beings to be nourished in, to be nourished on the experience we have when we have a mystical life. So I think that Christmas can lead us in that right direction. If we can have one day of the year where it's Christmas, and we understand that giving gifts is a way of being economical, we can have an economy among human beings by gift giving, then we could also have every day of the year have some of those sort of unreal values.
Yeah, you mentioned gifts just now and earlier as well. I know that's a symbol that you play with as well in your book. Do you want to go a little bit deeper into that?
Well, just what I was saying, that I think what happens at Christmas is we are celebrating the arrival of a new way of life represented in the infant. And when Jesus grows up, he teaches that new way of life. And it's a radical teaching because he suggests that we live by agape, which is a kind of love that is selfless. And that, you know, we just don't have a world that is based on that. we our world is based in the, here in the United States, it's largely based on laws, which is fine. We need laws, but we need something else. We need utopia as well. We need a world in which people can really love each other and have values that are not so realistic and not so limited and so basic. We need a more extravagant way of looking at life. And we can live that way. We can each live that way to some extent, but it'd be nice if we all could. And I think Christmas is about the birth of that kind of vision for life. So that's what we are aiming for. And so when we talk about magic and mysticism, we are talking about what the way to live in this world that is not limited by the old ways of having to be mechanical and only scientific and egotistical.
Is abundance perhaps a good word there, that in a time like Christmas, it's leaning into this economy of abundance rather than practicality, maybe?
Oh, yes. The gifts we give don't have to be practical. And the gift-giving is not too practical either, because when you give a gift, you can, you know, people do turn Christmas gift-giving into something that is not ideal. They become worried about what they're going to give to people, and they think sometimes that the more they spend on a gift, the better it is. Things like that. That's not really true. In a gift-giving culture, we would we want to be with other people and love them from the heart, and the gifts we give show that we can live together out of love and free giving rather than out of some kind of commercial financial exchange that is really, you know, it doesn't come from the heart. It comes from trying to make everything even, make sure everyone is getting their piece of the action. And that's not the same. It's giving is an offering of oneself from the heart, and the gift represents that. So I'm not saying that we or all Christians necessarily, or people are it who are attracted to the Jesus way, have to be so idealistic. They don't have to be. But I think they have to bring that into their life if they really want to do it. They have to bring some of Christmas into their daily life. And part of that would be giving gifts. That means that you're not going to always be cutthroat in your financial exchanges, but that you can be open-hearted much of the time. And I think that's just the way it goes. I feel that there are so many instances I get into where people would say, well, you're being taken advantage of. You could make more money if you did this or did that. And I think to myself, that's certainly true, but you know, I really believe in this Jesus way. I really do. I'm not officially a Christian, but I believe in it. I really trust it. So if it comes to that, I will say, I remember Christmas. Christmas, we give gifts and you don't get anything in return. Okay, this time I'm going to give something to somebody. I'm not going to get paid for it, but that's Christmas again. Christmas every day.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, when we use words like, hey, be more idealistic, or, you know, utopia is a word that we've used in this conversation. You know, I mean, I can't help but think Christmas, a lot of times, it's not always a joy for everyone. You know, it can bring up grief and loneliness or stress. And how can we kind of honor these aspects of the human experience during the holiday season, while also, you know, as I mentioned earlier, give utopia a chance and lean into this economy of abundance and idealism?
Well, you have to understand, this is basic, that life is full of joy and full of pain. That's just the way it is. And at Christmas, it's interesting that we approach Christmas through the darkest night of the year. So this is another important connection with Christmas, is that it takes place at the solstice. And that's when the sun is least present to us. And you know, the sun is not just there to give us physical warmth. The sun can make you feel alive and happy. A friend of mine just told me the other day, if he gets up in the morning and the sun is shining, he's ready to go. And if the sun isn't shining, he wants to stay in bed. He doesn't want to get into life. So we have to remember that. Light comes in the darkness. We're celebrating the birth of light at Christmas, and all that image of the manger with the infant. And you don't have to take that historically. You can take it as, again, another aspect of the myth of Christmas, is that light itself is being born. And we see in many paintings of the Nativity, there's light coming from the child or light coming from the little barn they're in. That light is meaningful. You know, that light means something because that is a celebration of light. Light coming after the whole year has grown so dark that there's hardly any light left. At least that's what some of us feel. I live in New Hampshire. I really feel it. There's not much light left in December. And you can feel it. You just wish that we had longer days. Well, that's part of it. So we are close to our pain, close to the darkness that is part of life. But that's why the light, the coming of light, is so valuable and important. It's something we want to celebrate at Christmas.
Yeah, and that reminds me of the prologue of John's gospel. This light has come in the darkness, and the darkness cannot overcome it. I mean, that is such a mystical passage in Scripture, and you quote it twice in your book.
Well, that's a remarkable mystical passage in the gospel. So I think what that opening is saying to us is that in the beginning, to begin with, was the Logos. That's what the gospel says. Logos is a word that I don't translate. I have translated all the gospels. So I published a translation of the gospels. And in my translation of that, I can't remember it exactly and don't have it with me, but it is that to begin was the Logos. Sometimes they say the beginning was the Word. That's how they translate Logos. It does mean Word, but it means something much deeper. It means the way things are. It means this is the way things, this is the how things work. This is how life is, Logos. That's what this is. We have our word logic from it, but it's much more than logic. So I keep the word logos, the Greek word, because it's a mystical word. In the beginning was the logos. That means that in the beginning, this world had meaning. It had logos to it. It had logos in it. And the logos was divine. And when we talk about God and divinity, we are talking about partly about this source of a meaningful world we live in. It's not chaos. And that's amazing. A lot of religions begin their stories of origin by saying that the world is not chaotic. That's so important. There's order here. And we are part of that order. So part of our job is to find the logos in ourselves as human beings. What does it mean to be a human being? How do they work? And also ourselves individually. I'm Tom. How does Tom work? What is Tom's logos? That's the question. So I think my translation is, and the darkness doesn't darken. The darkness that is here doesn't extinguish us. We can live in darkness because we do have some source of light, but it doesn't mean that we can't live in the dark, because the dark doesn't have to undo us. And at Christmas time, we realize that. We've gone through this advent of darkness, the days getting shorter and shorter, where you wonder if there's any sun left. And then suddenly it all turns around. Solstice. The solstice means, the word means that the sun stands still. And so the sun stands still, and then it turns and starts growing. So that's a wonderful time to celebrate Christmas.
Yeah, you mentioned in this darkness, we are particularly close to our pain. And yet, as we just talked about, the light is still there. You've got a background in psychotherapy. And I'm wondering, you know, what kind of therapeutic direction might you give to someone who perhaps struggles to find the beauty or magic of Christmas because of the holidays? Association with pain, trauma, or loss, you know, this darkness that we're talking about, anything in your therapy background that you think might be helpful for listeners?
All right, absolutely. All of therapy, at least the way I understand it, has to be not trying to create a life that is all light, where everything works out fine. No, you can't do that. So therapy is to try to embrace the things, the sad things that happen, the mistakes that are made, and embrace those and acknowledge them. And maybe even understand in many cases, if not all, how they play a role in your unfolding. Just as the more the positive and the happier things do. We don't have to choose one thing against the other. That has been part of religious understanding for centuries, that there's good and there's evil and they're in a fight with each other. You don't have to look at it that way. And I think that's what I'm trying to say about Christmas. You celebrate the solstice. What I really appreciate, and I've lived in Ireland quite a bit in my life, and one of the things that I've done many times in Ireland is go to Newgrange, which is prehistoric. Well, I don't know if prehistoric is the word. It's 5,000 years old, temple, sort of. And you can go and visit it now. People go on the solstice day, and they can go, and you have to crawl inside you really have to get down on your knees to get in it. And you feel these very smooth but incredibly, you know, powerful boulders that form this little entryway. It's just like a little triangular entry. You crawl through it, and you feel it rubbing against your shoulders. I'm claustrophobic myself, but it somehow doesn't bother me. And I go through this little entryway, and then you go through a little lower place, and then finally end up in a chamber inside this thing, which is a wonderful thing to be in this chamber in the earth. And it looks like it's set up as a little temple, a little chapel. I mean, it's not made this way. It's natural stone and everything. But as you're there, if you're there on the 21st of the month of December, most years it's that date, and you see the sunrise when the solstice has the sun return. The sun at this temple is built in such a way that the sunlight comes into the temple only on that day. And that's the celebration of the sun coming in. Now, that's pretty impressive. And if you are mystical minded, or even psychologically minded in a deep way, you'll say, this is my life. My life is always in darkness, but there are always opportunities for this life, for the sun to show itself and to come in and enter into my space and to give me light. So that Christmas is celebrated one day of the year, as the solstice is, but it can actually be part of our life all the time. So the sun is always rising and always setting. It's always dark and it's always light.
Yeah, which gets back to, you know, the Paschal mystery and least in the Catholic tradition, the notion of the Eucharist and communion, that it is the celebration of a dying and rising simultaneously. And it's a pattern for our own lives as well. One of my favorite things about your book is, one of them is that on a personal level, it helps to form within my own soul an openness to the magic of the Christmas season. But then on a bigger level, I also love that this book brilliantly universalizes Christmas. You know, and we tend to think of Christmas as a you know, kind of Christian holiday, and it certainly is and has that background. But why would you say that Christmas and its spiritual significance is for everyone, non-Christians alike?
Well, we just talked about how a little bit, I didn't get into it too much, but how Christmas is really is rooted in the experience of solstice. That's for everybody. Solstice is something that everybody on the planet can experience. And even if you don't think about it too much, I think if you stand there and notice on the day of the solstice that the light is the shortest and now the sun's going to start getting brighter, that has an effect on your emotions and on your maybe your plans, you know, for your life. And so I think it's true. The solstice would be true of everybody. The solstice is very, it's a very big foundation even for the Christian Christmas. So it's there. That's one thing. The other thing is that if you think of, I think it's a mistake. I think it's a big, I'm speaking as a theologian now. I think it's a big mistake that we have thought that Jesus created a religion, as we understand a religious institution. You don't get that in the gospel. It's just not there. People read back into it that because that's what they've experienced, but it's not there. And but he is suggesting that his kingdom is like the kingdom he talks about, that he's announcing his kingdom. It's going to be different. It's not going to be based on laws. It's going to be based on love. He couldn't be clearer about that. And so it's a different kind of realm in which you live, a different realm, and it doesn't make any difference what your religion is. I mean, that has nothing to do with it, as far as I can see, nothing whatsoever to do with it. But it has everything to do with how you are as a human being. Because we have emphasized this belonging and all the history and rituals of religion, that it has really severely limited the gospel teaching. And it's not that the institution couldn't embody and help spread the word of this teaching, but it doesn't. It tends to emphasize belonging and observance of rules, which are exactly contrary to the gospel teaching. So I'd rather be a person who follows the gospel than someone who's a member of the religion. And when it comes to Christmas, if you want to be a member of the religion primarily and follow the rules, say, okay, I know when I grew up, there were two kinds of people in the world, Catholics and non-Catholics. That's what I was always taught. That's a weird way of being in the world. And I mean, what about the Buddhists and the Taoists and the Jews and the Muslims? You know, what about that? Do we just discount all these brilliant ways of imagining human life and guiding human life? I think all these are big mistakes. So if you can get past them at all, even just a little bit, you will see that the teachings of Christmas are not for believers and belongers, people who sign up for this religion. They are for every human being. That's what it's about. Every human being has to deal with negativity in life and discover light over and over again. That's what Christmas is. Every human being could discover that there's a way of being in this world where you're not going to be counting all your money all the time, but discovering ways to give gifts.
Yeah, and your emphasis there on humanity, I can't help but think, obviously, going back to the prologue of John's gospel, you know, at the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word becomes flesh. And there, whether you're, like you said, whether you're a Christian or not, whether you believe that to be literally true or not, my argument would be that there is something really beneficial psychologically and soulfully about daring to believe the reality that God can become human, that the divine incarnates in our physical reality. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, that's what Christmas is too, theologically in a Christian way. It's about the incarnation. It's about the fact that the divinity can take on flesh. It can be part of life. It can be on earth. So let's imagine that there are two tiers to this world. One is infinite and divine, transcendent, and the other is just basic human life. I think what the Christmas is teaching is that that divinity and that transcendence can be expressed and lived in human life. They can come together. And what we're seeing in the figure of Jesus, for those who can imagine it that way, who are interested in his story as their way of life and as describing how things are, the Logos event, then you can say that part of that is that what Jesus describes in his way of life and in his teaching is a way to be both transcendent and earthy at the same time. Two sides of him are very interesting. I like to give talks on Jesus and food because he was so interested in food. And then he makes it, but he brings them together at the Last Supper. He makes them magical and mystical. Food, bread and wine now becomes mystical. So the transcendent and the ordinary come together again.
Yeah, can you go a little bit deeper into that phrase for me? I love that. It's beautiful. The transcendent and the earthy, the transcendent and the ordinary. What does that look like in our everyday life?
It means that, very simply, it's a lot simpler than it sounds. I think what it means is that any of us as human beings can just try to get along in life the best we can according to our common standards. But at other times, we can actually transcend. We can go past that ordinary human way of doing things and adopt values that are much bigger, that are much higher in a way than that. And I think a lot of people that we have seen, we've known people in our history who give so much to us because they give us a higher viewpoint. I think the best example for Americans is Martin Luther King. He just wanted to be a theologian teaching at a university. And he got a call from Birmingham to go down there and help the people who were trying to do something about justice. And he had a choice to make. He and his wife both wanted to be university professors. That's what they were headed for. But he took the call and he went down to Birmingham and he became Martin Luther King. I think a transcendent person. When we say Martin Luther King today, we don't mean this man who wanted to get a job at a university. We don't think of him that way. He's this man who embodied, in everything he did, he embodied the transcendent values, divine values of justice, of equality, these things that human beings don't get by themselves. These are overarching, high values that the religions teach as high values, but we don't take that too seriously. And Martin Luther King did. There are other people who have done, obviously, who have done something similar. And they've gone out and given themselves. I think ordinary people can do that too. We all can find that transcendent thing within us where we go beyond ourselves. That's like Christmas happening again. The divine has become incarnated in this child. And here we are. Now we are an infant in doing this. We are an infant. But we are going to grow into someone maybe who can really bring that divine, transcendent vision to the world around us. We can all do that.
Yeah. How did Christmas help form your own soul?
Well, I think the way it began... For me, my memories of early Christmas are with my mother and father in our very little house in Detroit, where we had very little money. I remember one year I was given a bicycle, beautiful bicycle, red bicycle for Christmas, and I just loved it. And I discovered a few years later that it was my uncle's bike that they had repainted, my dad painted to make it new for me. And they were doing that sort of thing a lot. And trying to give me a special experience of Christmas. So to me, Christmas was like a time set apart. It was a special day. You get up at Christmas and it was a special day. Now, maybe people could say, reduce it and say, oh, the kids like to get gifts. Well, yeah, but getting a gift is a deep, deep experience for a person. Very important for children to get a gift at any time, but especially at Christmas. So I feel that I learned Christmas through my family. They took it seriously. My mother and father were very devout Catholics. We would go to church. And that was a special thing because the lights were always bright at the Christmas church, Christmas Mass. And but the family got together and people exchanged simple gifts, nothing much, and celebrated the cheerfulness of Christmas. So all of that, I think those are real values of Christmas. When people say, what's the real meaning of Christmas? It's having a good dinner, exchanging gifts, having a tree in your house. That's what it is. It's nothing theological, you know? It's simple, but it's profound at the same time.
Yeah, I have a 2.5-year-old at home and a 6-month-old. And my wife and I, we've enjoyed, particularly with our 2.5-year-old, because of his awareness now. It's very interesting that you kind of, the aspects of your heart that perhaps maybe became cynical or jaded along the way, that all of a sudden, seeing things through the eyes of your little ones, it opens you up in a way to the magic that they're experiencing.
Yes, totally. Completely. I think of our children when they were small. They would get up about 4 a.m. to go ahead and get their gifts for Christmas, you know. And my wife and I would think, oh, no, it's Christmas Day. You know, we have to get up very early because they can't stand it. They have to go down and be part of the Christmas celebration. It's wonderful that children are so drawn to it and can appreciate it. Not everybody, I understand so many children are deprived of that. And that's the sad part. We have to, I think, be good to push Christmas a little more. And I think it's a great thing, by the way, going back to another theme of yours, that people who are not Christians can adopt Christmas and make it their own, because it doesn't belong to Christianity. Christianity is one dimension of it, if you want to have that. But even Christianity is much deeper if you go into it, like we're trying to get there today, to the deeper level. So the deeper you go into it, the less it's limited to card-carrying Christians and more to everybody to experience that. And it's a sad thing when children don't. So many children are raised in poverty and ignorance where they can't have that experience. But those of us lucky enough to have it, and parents like you being able to continue and give it to their children, it's a wonderful thing. If you understand that you're giving them, don't think of it as something materialistic, giving children things. No, those things are representative of a gift-giving way of life. They are learning how to give gifts. And if you can help them with that, the gift-giving, as the season goes, when Christmas comes along, that would really help them a lot.
Yeah. A lot of what you've been talking about the last 5-7 minutes is, it's really revolved around this notion of experience, encounter, you know, as Pope Francis would use. Is one thing to have a bunch of theology in your head and regurgitate it. It's quite another thing to, like last night, my son and I, he made cookies with my wife all day, and then we delivered cookies to our neighbor, and he said, Merry Christmas, Alan. You know, right. And there's, you know, there, okay, now, that's more theology.
Yeah, totally. It's a lived theology. You don't want to make theology into something totally rationalistic, you know, and mental. It's not that. Especially, theology is about a way of life. And I think by seeing these images and symbols of Christmas, it takes you deeper into it so that you're not at that level of belief and rules or expectations or trying to be good or anything like that. You are just being a human being and discovering that giving gifts and being open and having some cheer in your life and giving that to your neighbors, that is what it's all about. That's what it's all about. It's not what you believe in some sort of theological way. That's where things have gone. It hasn't made a peaceful world. We could make a peaceful world if we took Christmas more or deeper.
Yeah, I know you've gone into that a little bit, but could you go a little bit deeper into that notion that if we took Christmas, if we approach Christmas in a deeper sense, we could bring more peace into the world?
I don't know how we can actually get to that point. People like me, we try to let people know there's another way of thinking about it. But we get, like, I get reactions, I get negative responses to my saying things like this. I won't go into it. I don't want to go into that too much. But I think if we were to just understand Christmas a little more deeply, just a few of these ideas we're discussing today, not the whole ball of wax, the whole thing, because that's asking too much. But if people understand just the simple idea that, first of all, they understood about solstice and light, they could go out and just look at the night sky and see that's part of your Christmas experience. It's dark. And think about the darkness in your own life and other Christmases. You know, your story is not about death, dealing with death at Christmas time. It's very common. There are a lot of deaths at Christmas. Or people do remember people who were not here, who were here last Christmas. Death is part of it. And bringing that into it and having a deeper reflection on life and understanding that the world is much more meaningful than you think. And that the sky, the nature we live in, is part of the meaning of our life. And that's why we bring the tree into our house. We're bringing nature into our homes to get over that separation between us and the natural world. And that's part of, that's all of that comes together to make Christmas. There's one thing, I'm afraid we might miss it, and you might want to bring it up, but I'll bring it up now, is we haven't talked about Santa Claus. And
yeah,
I love,
please, that'd be great, yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
I love Santa Claus. First of all, the name Santa means holy. So if we want to call him Santa, which I like a lot, that would mean the Holy One. That's a good way to look at him, the Holy One. Not some funny little figure from Walt Disney, although Disney's not too bad at times. But Santa is a holy figure. And imagine what he represents. He is so much like other holy figures. He is found at the North Pole, which is like saying he's in another realm. He's not of this realm. He's of another realm that we need. He's from that transcendent realm at the North Pole. It's a great image for him. He goes across the sky. That's where the divine is found. That's where the angels appear. It's where the shaman visits when he goes into a trance. It's in a transcendent realm. That's where Santa lives or works. That's his realm. He has a conduit to ordinary life, just as we bring a Christmas tree into a house. He can come down the chimney. So the chimney is like this connection between heaven and earth. And he comes down the chimney, and one tradition is that we give Santa some food when he arrives. We give him something because we are welcoming him into this realm. That spirit of gift-giving, he's got a sleigh full of gifts. That spirit of gift-giving, which is there in the divine realm, now can be in each family and in each person coming through the chimney, reaching us, you know, having a way of getting to us. And he is... He has his own mantra. You know, a lot of religions have mantras, or they have things that they, little phrases that they say, sometimes in their favorite languages, but little short phrases. I don't know. Lord have mercy, they say in some places. Little mantras. His is, ho, ho. That's his mantra. Ho, ho, ho. That's his special sacred little chant. And he has bells ring as is common too for when the angels appear or when the holy is present. That other realm has appeared, a bell rings. He has these little things that jingle. All these things are related to Santa. He's dressed in his own priestly garb, you might say, in his red and white uniform, and we recognize him from that. And he is carried by the, he is propelled by reindeer. So he has this animal connection, which is so important in the religions generally, to have an animal part of life. So I think that Santa, and he gives gifts, that Santa embodies all these values of Christmas, and he should not be denigrated or put down. It's very important, Santa, the Holy One, showing us how what it means to be in the Christmas spirit. And he's saying, ho, 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 that's like saying, this is what you should be doing, just as the Buddha might have a different gesture or phrase that's going to show you how to live. Santa tells us how to live with this good spirit.
Yeah, and here's another religion parallel. Curious what you think about this, but I mean, Santa in a lot of ways has unfortunately been transformed into something that promotes legalism. You know, like you only get gifts if you do this, if you're good or bad, you know, and I mean, but the Santa you're describing, and again, we're in the realm of symbol again, but the Santa you're describing, it's magical. You know, there's sacred elements to it. There's a story behind it. There's an origin behind it. And to me, I mean, unfortunately, that's what religion has become, is it's, you know, this angry, usually masculine figure up in the sky who is, you know, cosmically shaking his finger at you. And really, let's bring magic back. You know, like let's bring grace and love and compassion and even some things that may be hard to believe, like God becoming a human baby. You know, that's very hard to believe, but what if we dared to believe it? You know what I'm saying? Like there's always this tendency in any religious thought to kind of lean more toward the logical and lean more toward the formula, or do this, this, and this to make so-and-so happy, where we're missing out on the sacred and the depth and immensity of that if we go that direction.
Yeah, we've taken the Santa out of Santa Claus.
Yes, yeah, the holy.
Yeah, so yeah, that's right, absolutely. In order to live this way, which is more mystical, I think, to really live Christmas, you need to enter a certain level of mysticism. Doesn't mean anything huge, just a little bit, you know, just a little inch in that direction. But if you can do that, your life would be transformed, because human beings are only fulfilled when they are both body, soul, and spirit. When they have that spirit, meaning that divine transcendent realm, is really in your life. That means that you live by some values that don't seem wise from a purely earthy point of view, but from a transcendent point of view, make a lot of sense. So we have to reach that point where we can live in all three realms of the body, the soul, and the spirit.
Yeah, I know we're coming up on the hour. Do you have anything else that you'd like to talk about or anything that I left out? It's really a beautiful book, and I encourage our listeners to get it. I mean, it really helps to create that posture of openness in the heart to what this season can be. So anything else you'd like to dive into?
Just show you the book. This is The Soul of Christmas. It's a very short book, 140 pages. I say that because I've been writing short books lately, and people tell me, I really like this new book of yours. It's short. People like short books. So I would say there are many other things that we did not discuss that are in here that, you know, we could. Not many, but some things we didn't discuss. And I would say one thing that we didn't talk about that I love, one of my favorite subjects, is angels. Mm. Angels related to Christmas. According to the gospel, as well as it's in the gospel. A lot of these things are not in the gospels, but the angels are. Angel, the word means a message or messenger, either one, messenger or message. And the angel is really, in the Christian view context, the angel is the go-between, between the transcendent realm and the earthly realm. Someone who gets between, that's why the angels have wings, because they can fly between the lower earthly realm, metaphorically speaking, can fly between the earthly realm and the transcendent realm. In all religions, and most religions, you see that there are ways to connect the transcendent and the earthly. And very often the figures that do that are imaged as winged figures. They have wings. So an angel is a winged messenger, essentially, a go-between. The corresponding figure in Greek religion, for example, would be Hermes, the god Hermes, who has wings on his shoes. Those help him go between the earthly realm and the realm of the gods. It's very common. But we don't believe in angels. I do. Most people don't. I believe angels are very real. Now, I don't mean that they are real in the sense that a cloud in the sky is real. I don't mean physically, tangibly there, but I mean real in the sense that I feel that there are moments when the angel makes itself known in my life. In protection, for example, I remember once driving my car. I was in Hartford, Connecticut. And I didn't see a stop sign. A very wide street, must have had five or six lanes, and the stop sign was way, way over on the side of the street. And I just went straight on, thinking that the street just kept going, and a cement truck came at me. And I was sure it was over for me because I knew I couldn't stop in time. I just, my foot just instinctively slammed into the brake. And shocking to me, I didn't hit the truck. I was certain the truck was right there to speak. I think that's, to me, that's pretty good image of an angel. For me, I can take, that's real. The sense that I have been saved from disaster by something that I can't explain or control. I don't mean out there. I don't mean some actual energy there. I mean, this was the experience in my life of being saved from being really smashed. And I think that's a good way of talking about angels. Do you see what I'm saying? There's no angel, there's no figure there, there's no being there. But the experience shows that life has this quality of protection sometimes.
And it leads you to gratitude and reverence.
It does. And I don't have to use the word angel, but I think it's a good one because it's traditional for what angels do. And see, what I'm saying? It's very hard to describe this. I'm not putting that into any kind of being out there that stepped in. I'm just saying that this is life. It's a quality of life that you get protected sometimes.
Yeah, and it's a transcendent quality of life. That is very real. Whether you believe in literal angels or not, that's not the thing. Do you believe that life as it is has a transcendent realm to it? And angels open that up for us, or a belief in, you know, the incarnation or Santa Claus or the spiritual depth of your Christmas tree that's shining bright in your living room. You know, all these things are portals to, you know, there's something deeper going on here in my life Do I really believe that, or have I just been on autopilot?
Yeah, for example, should you just at times of the solstice, like this week coming up, should we just listen to the weather report and find out from the meteorologist what is happening? Or can we go to the religions and discover, oh, they can guide us into understanding that this is something meaningful to us? There's logos there. That's why logos is at the beginning in John. To begin, there is the logos. And that's what it means. It's meaningful. This world is meaningful. Let's not live in a mechanical world that doesn't have meaning. But we can't go for meaning to the meteorologist. Maybe in the future they will do that, but they don't do it today. They just give us the facts. And that's not enough to live in. Human beings are not just facts. We are people with emotions and imagination and understanding. We have to have all those things addressed in any experience we have. So I think that's true of like you were just saying, you can choose. Are you going to live? I would put it religiously or not. To me, it's religious to be open to the mistruths around us. And I don't care if you're a member of a church or not. You may not be religious if you're a member of a church. Possible. But do you have a religious sense? Do you realize that some things are sacred? That tree is sacred. Can you agree to that? That tree that you're bringing into your house has a sacredness to it.
Yeah.
If you can, you're a religious person.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to logos, you know, like you said earlier, the word that's often used interchangeably is word. I love that notion too, because if the word dwells within physical reality itself, I mean, all of a sudden, and I have to give credit to one of my mentors, Father Dan Riley, worked on a book with him called Franciscan Lectio, where he broke the word open. We usually think of reading the word as just reading scripture or reading words on a page. However, the word in and around us and through us, we're invited to read that. We're invited to read the sacred dimensions of the Christmas tree. We're invited to read the sacred dimensions of that moment you described when the cement truck is coming at you and you miraculously survive. To read the sacred in that and perhaps be stirred to wonder or awe or gratitude or whatever it may be. I mean, there's levels here. There's a spiritual dimension to things that we may typically just overlook.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm there all the way.
Well, you've got me all worked up now. So I better let you read this passage and free you from the podcast. You have a beautiful section, Thomas, a subsection in your chapter about Mary, I believe, and it's called A Mystical Christmas. And I was wondering if you could read the first four paragraphs of that and send us out into our holiday season.
Well, thank you for inviting that. Christmas offers an opportunity to get in touch with your own mystical side. We are all potential mystics. Just stand still in the presence of a beautiful sunset, and your mysticism will be activated. An essential ingredient is wonder and the capacity to become absorbed, to lose yourself for a moment in wonder or contemplation. Meditate on the nativity scene in your town or neighborhood. Have one in your home, whatever your spiritual preferences are. Don't take it lightly. Nothing could be more important than finding ways to incorporate in your person and your life the moment when the spiritual realm fully intersects with your ordinary life. You may feel there is no room for you in the inn of religion or community or tradition. That's an appropriate feeling for this time. Find your own stable, your humble place in the world. Let the revelation happen. Listen for the angels announcing the good news that another life has been redeemed and transformed. At Christmas time, we can all discover the Christos in us and the Virgin Mary as well, the maternal, feminine, mystical figure who can say yes to life. Imitating Mary, you say, let it be. Let me be the vessel. I don't know what it's all about, but if it furthers life, I am willing. I want to be the means by which human life advances.
Thank you, Thomas. I appreciate you coming on Off the Page, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, and I hope you have a wonderful time with your children.
Once again, that was Thomas Moore. Thomas's book, The Soul of Christmas, is available in the Franciscan Media Store at shop.franciscanmedia.org or wherever you order your books. A huge thanks to our sponsor, the Franciscan School of Theology, and to Thomas Moore for joining us on Off the Page. Thank you, as always, to you for tuning in and supporting this podcast, and I invite you to please consider leaving a review or sharing it with your friends or family. This is Stephen Copeland, signing off. Merry Christmas from all of us at Franciscan Media. Peace and all good.
I will lead you into the desert with me and tenderly speak to your